money and markets, the swarm on Obama and Holder intensifies. We've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. You know, this week I really said, what is the goal? Is the goal to, you know, to basically push Obama out and put Biden in? You know, that's essentially putting the Vatican's man in charge. And so with the Jesuit at the top of the Vatican and Biden at the top of the White House, you've got quite an interesting combination. Or is it just to tighten the leash and make sure Obama's doing everything that's wanted? The hot spots we're going to talk about are Syria and Iran and bank regulation, but there are a few appointments that are controversial and tied up with that as well. It got so bad this week and so silly that we see, somebody sent me Matt Drudge's Twitter feed, not something I regularly follow, and on 2 days ago, Drudge tweets that the squabbling is so out of control, and then he follows it today with an equivalent of promoting coming clean and spiritual ascension. My words are not his. And, you know, you sort of feel, well, uh-oh, when Drudge hits that wall, you know it's getting bad. So what happened? We saw the G7 come together in emergency meeting several weeks ago. That's what inspired me to write write the blog post on Make Way for the Killers. IRS turned over, but Holder sort of under attack. It slowed down during the week of the Oklahoma tornadoes. And then Bilderbergers gets together and meet. Remarkable job of no tight lids on leaks and decisions coming out of the Bilderberger meeting. But the swarm and attack on Holder, with many people calling for Holder's resignation, picks up afterwards this week. Next week, we have the G8 summit in the UK with Cameron in charge. The top three issues for discussion include taxes and transparency, which tells me that the tax haven hunt is on, and sort of the nuts and bolts will be discussed increasingly. Of course, transparency means more one in the one-way mirror. That's Glenn Greenwald's term that I love, which means, you know, transparency is they can see everything, but it is a one-way mirror. At the heart of the administration, the U.S. administration's challenge is twofold. One is we have war drums for Syria and the Middle East as the Iranians go to the polls this Friday to reaffirm that they may disagree about the presidential candidate, but not on remaining independent and outside of the empire. And, of course, what is this all about? Both Syria and Iran are considerable leakages on the way to a one-model global empire. At the same time, and not unrelated, rising interest rates and the potential for a real spiral down in the financial markets. In the last 3 weeks, and you'll see some of these charts up on the blog, we see real estate and housing trading off as much as 10%, with several billion in IPOs shelved or in doubt. Municipal bonds, depending on the duration and how you count them, down about 5%. That's even more disturbing, I think, than the real estate and housing, which can bounce around. We see emerging market debt under real pressure, lots of articles, including from the bankers, about the danger of emerging market. What is that really about? It's the possibility of contagion from the Japanese debt market, which James Corbett and I talked about in my interview last week. But the Asian bond market, so under even more pressures. U.S. financials are now starting to trade off, and they have been leading the equity, the U.S. equity markets this year, along with healthcare. So, you know, enormous pressure. We see headlines this week as emerging market debt is sinking, and including the chairman of J.P. Morgan saying real danger in emerging market debts. We see headlines, emerging markets will make up 50% of the world economy. So promoting the growth of Wall Street Journal editorial on volatility. And the problem is that everything other than cash is heading down in this environment. Stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, both in developed and emerging markets. And frankly, given what's being proposed on the bail-ins, cash does not look as good as it used to. So where do you go? And the reality is that there is no financial solution for a political problem. And all of those, you know, that deflationary spiral reflects a political problem more than a financial one, at least given all the information that we know. And so there's a real need to transform the model, but the reality is that there's no process by which the players can get in the room and start to do that. Certainly, as I said, it looks like the overt guys between G7 and G8 are trying to do it, although G8 means Putin's going to be there, so the the stinker is going to be there for the G8 meeting or the his representatives. The reality is we're continuing in the slow burn, and that means that the grind for cash and capital is going to keep on going, and that hand is going to keep reaching out for the piggy bank, and it's going to be made worse if interest rates starts to rise. So let's look at interest rates, because there's a very serious story, and I want to connect the dots for you on it. Derivative regulation. We saw the second phase of swap rules go into effect this week. They require financial institutions to bring certain credit default swaps and interest rate swaps into central clearing. If you look at the full gamut of what we know to be the derivatives outstanding, the highest percentage is interest rate swaps. And I believe it's been the interest rate swaps that have been so germane to bringing interest rates down to a phenomenally low level. And that's important because that long-term bull market in bonds depends on those interest rates not turning and rising, and rising particularly rapidly as well. So the interest rates, particularly in the sovereign bond market, are germane to everything that's going on politically. Now, in May, we saw the House, as interest rates were starting to rise, we saw the House pass a bill to try and roll back the Commodity Future Trade Commission's efforts to regulate the banks on derivatives. At that time, we're seeing leaks coming out of the House and the Senate questioning CFTC Chairman Gary Gensler's role in the MF Global resolution. The attack is off point, but of course it's politically more palatable than to say you want to let the banks go free and do whatever they want. So attacking Gensler on the MF Global resolution is sort of politically a safe way to go. Then yesterday, we see rumors from Huffington Post that Gensler is going to be replaced with a Senate staffer who's also a former Goldman Sachs employee, although only there for a brief period at a low level. This morning, we see new reports discounting the Huffington Post leak. What you see is the challenge is that the system and the U.S. government is highly dependent on the banks to manage interest rates down and hold the bond market together. And so how do you turn around and re-regulate them at the same time you're dependent on them to keep the game going? It's a double bind, and the banks and the government are both in it. And what it means is the friction in the system is mind-boggling. And part of the problem, of course, is when you are this dependent on a group of banks to rig things, they always end up taking too big of a skim as payment for doing so. Losing Gensler would be a very big loss. He's the smartest financial person in the administration. He's a principal in his own right. He's an old classmate of mine, so I know him personally. He's one of the few people I know capable of leading this kind of regulatory effort. So it always matters incrementally who's in those positions. So let's hope he stays. It would be, I think, a terrible loss to replace him with somebody who is just doesn't have the background or the experience to do the job. If things get critical on interest rates, it could cause a real spiral down. And with someone in that position who doesn't have Gensler's intelligence and clout, again, it could make it worse. One way the system could stop the problem is with more aggressive action on Syria. The reality is cannibalizing another leak in the model and stealing more assets helps to keep the game afloat. You know, we have steadily kept the game afloat with more war, which pushes more cash into the players who are beating the drums and causing the problems. At the same time, we see enormous Sturm und Drang on the NSA whistleblower, and of course there's no new news in the whole story. Wired did a great article on the Utah Center that was up on the blog last year. And, of course, many people, including our blog commentaries, have been following from the Patriot Act on all of the compromises of phone and internet security by the NSA and the intelligence agencies. So there's no new news here. You kind of wonder what the goal of this and who's promoting it and why. The whistleblower story, in my opinion, does not make any sense. John Rappaport had a great blog post asking the questions, and his pre-record for next week is on that topic exactly. So I'll defer to him and I won't go into it, although I did post the blog post and it's a real good one. The reality is, and I also put up a quote from Franklin Sanders, what Franklin Sanders experienced in 1991 and I experienced in 1998 is that the U.S. government was listening to, recording everything we didn't say in a way that, from what we knew, was far outside the law as we knew it. And essentially, they were free to engage in, you know, all sorts of criminality and illegality. And I've documented that. It's all up at the litigation section on the resource section on the Dylan Reed story. And, you know, so I regularly turned in affidavits proving that they were breaking the laws. And it didn't matter. They were above the law. So Franklin put out a quote in his newsletter saying, you know, so now they're doing it to everybody. And I sometimes feel like saying, welcome to my world. So a lot of this is not new news. And so you wonder just exactly why this media circus has been organized at this time. Anyway, the bottom line on this story for you and me is you need to understand that everything you do on the phone and internet is recorded by the NSA and aggregated with the data from other defense contractors. And if you look at the data that they're collecting, you know, from the Department of Labor, from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, there's a HUD document at every closing from, you know, 21 covered agencies. You're talking about database aggregation, which is absolutely phenomenal. You throw into that the healthcare data when that comes, and you'll understand why Franklin and I say never, ever, ever break the law. I have people saying, well, I don't have to pay taxes on the sale of these coins because I bought them with cash. Well, no, you just said that over the phone. So, yes, you do. Anyway, I've written an article about this, which I would seriously urge you to read, called The Data Beast. But it is important to understand that we do live in a world that is essentially going transparent at very high speeds. And we just have to assume that our actions and our communications are not private. There are things we can do to make them more private, but I think you have to assume, worst case, that they're not. S&P raises U.S. credit outlook. That follows Department of Justice bringing litigation against S&P. You know, S&P is the only rating agency to have downgraded them, so you kind of feel like the Department of Justice has gotten S&P back in the corral. Very interesting development this week. A real sign that I think that the accountants are getting ready for crowdfunding. They've posted the U.S. accounting organization has posted up a small business financial reporting framework, and we see Europe come out with the same thing a day or two later. Fannie Mae is challenging the U.S. takeover, if you can imagine that, as the folks at Fannie Mae have always had hubris. Okay, so tonight's interview, wonderful interview with Rainey Reitman, who is the head of activism at the Electronic Freedom Foundation. It was interesting, the NSA story exploded after we'd asked her about a month ago, and so the timing just worked out perfectly. We talk about privacy and what the compromises are, and what, most importantly, you can do. As I said, understand the one-way mirror. But if you listen also to Catherine Albrecht, who we've interviewed several times, Catherine's interviews on top of Rainey, they make several recommendations, including the Electronic Freedom Foundation has an app for both Google Chrome and Firefox, and called HTTP Everywhere. And I posted it up on the blog. And you can download it, and it helps protect your searches from being tracked. And then Catherine Albrecht has recommended StartPage, and I put another blog post up recommending that. StartPage is coming out with an email. They're in beta testing, so hopefully that's useful. One of the things I always tell people, I recommend you watch one of the movies that we did in Let's Go to the Movies called The Listening, and it will tell you why sometimes if I want to have a private conversation, I leave my cell phone in the car before heading into the restaurant. Another thing, I always try and encourage you to support the groups that send the lawyers into court. So that's why I'm a big supporter of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, but I'm also a member of the Electronic Freedom Foundation. I was when they first got started, and I've rejoined again. And they're terrific for sending attorneys into the courtroom. And that's important because if you look at the legal battles, it's not just a matter of lobbying Washington, which they do as well. But critical today is to march into the court and battle things out in court, as well as track the international agreements. We've had Scott Tipps on the Salieri Report, who's notorious for following, you know, diving into the Codex meetings and tracking what they're trying to do in the international agreements to remove health freedom. So it's a terrific interview, fun to listen to, and it's inspiring to hear how much a group of people are doing to try and protect the privacy that you and I both would love to enjoy.